Good morning, welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the sixth perek of Shmuel Beis. This is a very complex perek. It's a perek which really we could spend hours and hours on and analyzing. We're not going to do that. But just to be aware, there's so much more to unpack in this perek. I'd like to challenge you as you listen to this to try to think of one unified theme to this perek. There's two separate stories, but what unites the two stories that happen in this perek? What is the underlying thesis of the perek? So let's start. It starts off by saying that after David has done everything he has, he took the kingship, he's now reconquered Jerusalem, right? All the things that happened at the end of the last perek, as David HaMelech fights against the Plishtim. Now what happens is that David HaMelech makes another national gathering. He brings 30,000 young men together, and he goes to escort the Aron. Remember, the Aron has been waiting, not in the Mishkan, because the Mishkan has been destroyed. It's been living in a place called Kiryas Yearim. And he sends a delegation to go and bring the Aron up to Jerusalem, where it belongs. You can see David HaMelech is obviously centralizing Israel, right? Jerusalem's now going to be the center. The Aron's going to have its place. He's obviously moving towards the notion of the Beis HaMikdash. That's clearly where David HaMelech is going. And what he does is he sends a delegation. The delegation puts the Aron on a new wagon. And from the house of Avinadav, which is where it was staying. And Uzai and Achioi, the children of Avinadav, are bringing this new wagon up. And they're busy carrying it. And all of Israel and David are all playing or singing or in front of the Aron and playing music. It's a beautiful procession. However, something very unbeautiful happens. And that is as they pass the Gorin Nachon, what happens is that it slips. The cattle pulling the cart slip, the Aron slides, and Uzzah sticks out his hand to grab the Aron to save it, and Hashem grew angry. Vayichar af be'Uzzah, and Hashem grew angry with Uzzah, and he dies immediately there from touching the Aron. At this moment, it says Vayichar le David. David got very angry. Al asher poratz Hashem peretz be'Uzzah, that Hashem broke through and killed Uzzah. David Melech got very upset about this, and that's why the place is called Peretz Uzzah, the breakthrough of Uzzah. So David is actually, it says the next emotion that David experiences is not anger, but fear. And how he worries, how can I bring the Aron to Hashem, the Aron of Hashem to me? So what he does is instead he takes it on a detour and he brings it to the place called Oved Edom, who comes Hagiti. Even though Giti is from the city of Gat, he's actually a Levi, and he leaves it in the house of Oved Giti, and it stays there for 3 months. And what happens is that Oved's house, Oved Edom, has a very successful house those 3 months, which the Radak actually explains is that he has many children. His children all get married. They all have numerous children in a very, very short span of time. Miraculously, so clearly it's working out. And David Melech then, hearing about this blessing, sends another delegation for the Aron, and this time he does it more carefully. He brings up the Aron, and he takes basically every six steps of the procession, he brings more sacrifices. And David Melech is dancing wildly in front of the Aron, not in a secular wild way, but in a wild, passionate way in front of the Aron. And everybody's singing and everybody's good dancing in front of the Aron. And as this is happening, Michal, David's wife, is looking through the window, and she sees David. And in her heart, she disgraced him. She didn't approve of what he was doing. Anyways, he brings it to the Ohel, to the tent where it's going to be, which is nearby in Jerusalem. And David HaMelech finishes bringing the sacrifices. He divides all the sacrifices to the people. Obviously, eating from the Zevach is a great thing, like similar to a Kodesh Shel Bracha. And he comes home, wants to bring a blessing to his family, and out comes Michal. Michal says, Ma nichbad hayom melech Yisrael asher niglo hayom le'enei ima amahois avodav. What an honorable day, O King of Israel, who has now revealed himself in the way he displayed himself to even the maidservants of his servants. Ki galos niglos achad arekim, like one of those empty souls showing themselves off in public. And David HaMelech turns to him and he says, in a most acerbic way, Hashem chose me over your father, and he made me the king. I would become even more disgraced than this. And I would be disgraced in my own eyes, and I will still be honored. And Michal never had children until the day of her death. That's how the perek ends. Really strange stories. Lot going on over here. A lot to think about. One or two points to ponder. What was the mistake of Uzzah? So the Mefarshim point out that there were two mistakes that occurred. Number one is the Aron should not have been placed on a cart. The Aron was carried by Kosef Yisrael, should have been carried on the shoulder. It was disgraceful that it was put in the cart in the first place. Number two, what was clearly and overtly wrong, is that he should have also realized that although it's carried on the shoulder, the Aron noisei es noisav, the Aron carries itself, which means that the moment he came, put out his hand as if to think that he was really carrying it, was a display that he didn't believe that the Aron could carry itself, and he died because of that. Now, if you put those two pieces together, those two are conflicting ideas that he should have realized. On the one hand, he should have realized that you need to carry it. You don't put it on a cart. That's a disgraceful. That's almost a that's a menial or a way of looking after the Aaron. On the other hand, it's almost the opposite side, exactly the opposite of the same thing, and that is that you don't carry it too much. It carries itself. So there's a balance of understanding how the Aaron marches through time and through space, and understanding that balance of Hashem's presence among us. On the one hand, we bear his presence honorably, but don't think that for one moment that we're doing it ourselves. That's kind of the message that Uzzah is learning, unfortunately, or we're learning vicariously through him. It says that David HaMelech's reaction was anger. That's a strange thing. Who is he getting angry at exactly? So the Mitzvot David points out, if you look at the pronouns, it's Vayichar le-David. It was anger to David, which means al-atzmoy chara. He was getting upset on himself. Why was this? The Malbim adds on, because he realized that it was his responsibility to have educated those carrying it correctly, and therefore Uzzah's mistake was ultimately his responsibility. What a leader. He has a leader. He could have blamed everybody. He could have blamed he could have blamed the secretary. He could have blamed the person who sent out the notice to Hawaii first. Whatever it was, David had every excuse in the world to blame all the bureaucracy. And David HaMelech understood that it was actually a critique on himself. To go further, just as an incidental point over here, it is interesting that in Divrei Hayomim Aleph, Perek Yud Gimel, I'm going to send it out tomorrow to review. There's a similar, this story is retold in Divrei Hayomim. It is retold with a few other details in which it's clearer even there how much blame David takes for this on himself. This is clearly a notion where David HaMelech feels that this is a sign that his kingship isn't full, that his ability to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash is not complete. That's what David HaMelech realizes, and that's a terrible source of pain and angst for him, just thinking about the responsibility of these things. Coming to the end of the parak, when looking at the Michal episode, why exactly is she experiencing this feeling? Why is it so disgraceful to her the way that David HaMelech is acting? So the Malbim and the Menim of Forshim say, go along the same lines, is that she looks at kingship through the eyes of her father. Shaul was a man of great honor. He was a man of great pride. He was a man of distinction. And what happens is that when she looks out the window, she sees David acting in such a lowly way, like dancing among the lowly proletariats. Then she thinks to herself that he has, degraded the monarchy that he took for her father. And David HaMelech responds, no, your conception, or perhaps Shaul's conception of monarchy or respect, is warped, because it's not the external honor which counts, it's the internal honor. Meaning to say, if you're doing the right thing, if your passions are in the right direction, and you are honoring the right thing, which is the Aron of Hashem, then honor follows that, because that's where it starts from. It doesn't start from the external. Sometimes you see so many people become leaders, and they become so wrapped or trapped in their own sense of honor, believing as if they are the representative of the honor, when ultimately they lose track of what they're really supposed to be honoring. And that's what David HaMelech is saying to Michal. It is interesting and sad at the same time to note that I just a personal he'ara, and I think this is worthwhile considering, is that Michal has had to look through the window before. The window was the place that she lowered David out of the house when she actually betrayed her own father. The window was the place that when the guards of Shaul arrived at the door, she lowered David out of that window. And now she looks through that window, the window through which she made the sacrifice, the window through which her loyalties were tested. And as much as she supports her husband, there's still the worldview of her father, which she sees through it. And there's a struggle of identity as to what a king looks like. Is it her husband or is it her father? And this is the tragic window through which she looks. Why is that she doesn't have children? The Mefarshim debate this. Last point just to consider. The Malbim points out that in the long term of things, in a sad way, it is in fact a little bit of a blessing, because later on we're going to see that the Givonim are going to demand all the children, the remaining children of Shaul HaMelech, and David is going to, by divine nevuah, give them up to the Gibeonim, who and they're going to hang them publicly and kill them. And if David had had more children from Michal, that means he would have had to give up his own children from Michal, which would have been a terrible thing. The Mefarshim do point out that later on she did have, on the day of her death, she did have a child. We have to think a little bit more, why is this the requisite, or why is this the outcome of this debate? In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.